Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Seth Payne.
And I'm Sean Pendergast.
Did you know that Payne and Pendergast is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
That's awesome. Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or if you're a jump straight to the highlight person, we got you covered as well.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for our names, my name first, obviously.
Hey!
And hit the follow button to get every minute of the show, your way and on your time.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Podcast. New episodes drop daily.
Working with Clint here.
Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I was thinking about coming out of the shoot here and telling y'all about my new boots that I got on, but y'all want to talk about puppy chow?
Wait, what is that, ostrich?
Hell no, it's python.
It's Sterney's Daily.
Before we get to that boner.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yes, sir, and it's a reaction Monday, baby. Texans 26, Titans 0. We got a busy day now. The Astros, they are in Cancun, if they so choose to be. They'll be watching the playoffs this year. Rockets, Damn. They had their media day today. KD in a Rockets uniform, I believe, for the first time. That is going to be a ton of fun to watch, with or without Fred VanVleet. No disrespect. I don't want to minimize it. Fred's a big part of it, but I'm going to be honest with you. Amen Thompson, Alperen Şengün, Kevin Durant, yeah, man, I'm in for that right there. So the Rockets had their media day, which usually, I don't know exactly what their schedule looks like, but that usually is what kicks off the new season. And so basketball season is here, and it's going to be a ton of fun this year. But like I said, we've got a reaction Monday, and it's a victorious reaction Monday. Texans 26, Titans 0, which, by the way, it's worth noting, it's the first shutout for the Texans since the Andre Johnson, Courtland Finnegan get down game in 2018, Tyler. Was that 2018, right? Was that long ago? Courtland Finnegan and Andre Johnson fighting on the field?
May have been even before that, but somewhere around there.
I think that was it. Was Andre playing in 2018?
That's why I was hesitant. I thought maybe
it was 2010. Maybe I got my year wrong. Maybe it was like 2010 or something. Anyway, first shutout in a long time. It was ugly early, but the Texans absolutely exploded in the fourth quarter for 20 pints. 20 pints in the fourth quarter to stretch that thing out. 26 to zip. I don't want to sugarcoat this thing. That was as dysfunctional an organization as you're going to find in the NFL. They have to do their damnedest. Like, the Titans organization has to start making decisions around, do we want to allow this group to ruin Cam Ward, or do we want to make some moves and start getting this thing moving in the right direction, at least internally, so that one day on the field we can get this thing moving in the right direction. So bottom line is, Ron, I don't want to make too much out of this win, because it didn't move the needle for me at all when it comes to my confidence level moving forward with this Texans offense or the team as a whole. I think it showed exactly who they were. But there are three things. Do you have a year on that, Tyler? Did you have a year on that?
2010.
Yeah, 2010. If Andre Johnson was playing in 2018, hell, that was right before I started here. I knew that wasn't right. 2010. But there's three things, Ron, there's three things that I believe are very real that we can take from this game moving forward, and I think they transition to better opponents, better defenses, all right? The fact that C.J. Stroud was 2-for-3 in what I would call shot plays, balls that travel 20, 25 yards down the field, big plays, explosive plays. He had three opportunities, I believe, and he hit two of them. That can't be minimized in itself. But I think the bigger part of it, Ron, is I heard C.J. Stroud talking in the postgame about the touchdown to Higgins, which was more of a seam route to the right of the quarterback. And I thought, that's a good play, good throw. But when I found out that C.J. Stroud audibled into that play and then executed the play for a touchdown to a rookie that you need, I thought that is a moment that you can't create. You can create it in practice if you want to, but even when you hit it, it's not that big of a deal, right? The whole scenario of where, hey, we recognize what's going on. I've got my big-bodied rookie in the slot right here. I can throw a go route. I can check to this route right here, and we can take a shot. And then you hit that shot. That is absolutely worth its weight in gold. Here's C.J. Stroud talking about the touchdown throw to Higgins and what he saw.
Yeah, they were in man, and on film they show like this man where they go help, you know, the best player, the best receiver. So I felt 50 was about to go help Neek, and so I just signaled in a route concept that I thought would work. And so, yeah, we executed very well. They did a good job of, you know, executing the route plan, but I just seen something and I called it and it worked. So, you know, it's going to go that way sometimes. Sometimes it's going to go the other way, but it's all about us. If we're all wrong, we're right. And I think that was that big thing there. And we were right that time and made them pay. So
the other part of that makes it special, Ron, is we've talked about this a lot about, like, Nico Collins needs some help. So if C.J. Stroud comes to the line of scrimmage, instead of talking about in the post game how they took Nico Collins out of the game by shading a safety over or kicking a linebacker out, do something about it, right? And this was C.J. Stroud recognizing that and doing something about it and hitting it, striking down the field and hitting it and get points on the board. Ron, that right there to me cannot be minimized in this game as it relates to the offense taking a step forward.
Well, we got to see what it's like with C.J. having some control at the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
And being able to make decisions. I know in the offseason you talked about this will be something that will be a good thing for him. And a lot of people saw excitement in that the first 3 weeks of the season. I think we've seen him have more control and been a bit disappointed how it's worked out in protection. But I don't know if last year that is something that he has the ability to check to. And they got a big play out of it. And hopefully he is able to continue to check in.
Yeah,
to plays that make sense.
Well, it's just such a beautiful thing, Ron, because now you're dictating, right? You want to help on Nico? Okay, you're going to press my 6'4 receiver in the slot right here. Watch this. Let me take this high percentage shot over the top. High percentage because I get the matchup I want. I have no deep help. And now I got you. I got you in press man. It's exactly what I want. And in the moment, the quarterback can signal out there, and all of a sudden you gain a huge advantage, right? It's that easy. That's why it's plumb ass silly to not have that kind of ability within an offense. And so CJ doing that cannot be minimized, y'all. Lopez also, I heard him twice, two or three times on In the Loop today, doubling and tripling down on the Nico go ball that really started the momentum rolling for the Texans in the late third quarter. That apparently Lopez, I don't know if he's got an inside source or not, but apparently Lopez believes strongly that was also an audible of some sort. To get Nico the go ball on second and 33. Take advantage of a dumbass call by the defense, and CJ may or may not, according to Lopez, did that as well. So that kind of control, that kind of communication, having the guts to make the call and then executing it as flawlessly as they did is something that will bode well for them moving forward versus better defenses. Number two, talking about the takeaways from the Titans game that I think do transition to better opponents and moving forward in this season. CJ checking and having success at the line of scrimmage in the pass game, huge. Number two, the rookies. We've mentioned this multiple times in the show. I think Woody Marks and Higgins, look, let's just take it from this perspective, Ron. This offense lacks weapons, right? Yeah. Nico Collins is obviously a weapon. Everybody else has been an other. I don't care. Name them. They've all been others. There's been Nico and then a bunch of others at this point in time.
No fear. Nico's the only one.
None at all. No threat, no nothing. They desperately needed someone to step up. It happened to come in the form of rookies. Woody Marks, it starts there, Ron. He was Tyler's MVP of the game. Woody Marks was absolutely special. 119 total yards, one touchdown on the ground, one touchdown in the air. The wiggle and the ability to get physical in the pass pro pass protection game to me is what really, really, really stood out. But when you look at it, Nick Caley's ability to use him the way that the late, great Mike Leach used him in the run game and in the pass game was special. Higgins, the big-bodied rookie, up the seam on a go route, big target. That's how you want to use those two rookies in Woody Marks and Jaden Higgins. Those two guys, those two weapons emerging were I think something that'll bode well moving forward for this offense.
Yeah, I was listening to Andre and Mark Vandermeer and our guy
John Harris,
and John said the rest of the way in this game is in the second half. They need to use 12 and 27. Those are the two guys that are showing that they can give problems. Those are the two guys that you're gaining an advantage with. Now, Andre said, I want to mix in a little 86 too. But but 12 and 27. And to that point, John Harris and obviously, if you've listened to Andre, where you could tell he's been a fan of Woody Marks since he saw him at USC and had him in a game at USC. But clearly, those guys are there on the field watching this team and understanding, hey, Woody Marks is becoming more than just, as you said, another.
Yeah.
Or a complimentary piece or something like that. Like Nick Chubb did good yesterday. Woody Marks jumped off the page.
Yep.
I mean, I think even over Nico, he was the best weapon on the field per any team.
No question about it. And look, when the game is a game like the Titans offense was never going to score. They were never going to overcome a double-digit deficit at any point in time if you could ever get up double digits, right? And so in those kinds of games, when you know the opponent's offense is not going to have a chance in hell of scoring and scoring quick, then the Woody Marks, Nick Chubb, Dalton Schultz, Nico Collins, like that combination in a controlled manner becomes unbelievably valuable. And look, to Nick Cayley's, he did a good job. Yeah, to his credit, he did a good job yesterday. Now, so we're talking things to take away from the Titans' win yesterday that really transition moving forward, right? CJ checking and having success. Woody Marks and Higgins, those two offensive weapons emerging late in the fourth quarter. The third one for me, Ron, is Dalton Schultz. The usage, and he's a willing blocker. I think there was multiple times in that game. I know on the Woody Marks touchdown run, Dalton Schultz was in there mixing it up in a way that I don't recall him doing much of in the last year and a half. So his willingness to block right there, I think this team needs it desperately. But really, overall, with Dalton Schultz, the usage of Dalton Schultz, 5 catches, 6 targets. I think CJ Stroud, I said this a month ago, I think CJ Stroud needs to commit to finding Dalton Schultz early and often throughout games to draw the defense down, to make the defense respect Dalton Schultz. And then all of a sudden, you start hitting that mid-range game or those seams up the seam, those shots up the seam. You start hitting those, and those become more wide open than trying to force them down the field when the defense is sagging. I thought the overall usage of Dalton Schultz in the underneath pass game was spot on. I thought it was effective. And again, if we're looking at counterpunches to Nico Collins, if we're looking at counterpunches to Woody Marks in that run game, a tight end that can do what we saw Dalton Schultz do yesterday is big time. So I think number three for me in the things that transition versus better opponents is Dalton Schultz. Overall usage yesterday was spot on.
He looks like he's there and open as a safety valve, as a quick, easy 5 to 8.
And Ron, it's been there. It's been there all year. It's been there last year. It's been there. Like, I don't know. I said this last year. I don't know how Dalton Schultz, well, I guess because he was so piss poor in pass protecting, he probably couldn't complain much. But if I were Dalton Schultz, a veteran tight end that was expected to produce, I mean, there were times last year when I'd have grabbed CJ Stroud by the face mask and said, hey man, throw me the damn ball. Look for me. I'm wide open. They ain't even respecting me. Yeah. Right? Well, it looked like Sunday that they have at least addressed that, and Dalton Schultz was used in an effective manner. So again, the three things that the Texans can take away from a win that really doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot, it was a piss poor Titans team, is CJ's control and communication at the line of scrimmage is what resulted in at least one of the shot throw touchdowns, if not two of the big shot explosive plays that we saw. That cannot be minimized. Woody Marks and Higgins, those weapons emerging, and then the usage of Dalton Schultz. I think all of those things bode well moving forward and play on the road against somebody like the Ravens. So we'll see if they can keep that thing going I'm Clint Stern alongside Ron, the show, Ugly. T. Mills behind the glass. You listen to Sports Radio 610, Houston's sports leader. Tyler, did you hear your boy Elko talking?
I haven't got to hear it yet, but I think I know where you're going. I saw some quotes put out there on Twitter a little while ago.
I have not heard the audio. I read the transcript, so I don't know how serious. I hope he's serious as a heart attack. So apparently, A&M has got some, you know, one obviously they're having a good year, but one issue they're having is a penalty problem. Right? He's having a little bit of a penalty problem with his squad, and he was asked about it, and he said, I got a fix. He said the fix is from now on, guys that have penalties called on them, they're going to start donating to the coach's Cabo fund. Wouldn't that be a hell of a deal? In a day and age where players are getting paid, they may end up paying for the A&M coach's Cabo fund when it's all said and done.
Hell yeah!
That's one way to clean up. That's one way to clean up penalties.
Oh, for sure. And the penalty problem was more evident than ever.
I need to get an explanation on how this goes. Does this mean every single penalty, or do you have to be a repeat offender? Because now, if this is every single penalty, I feel like Mike's out here exploiting these kids.
Well, he might be.
All right,
here, man.
I need 10 penalties. All right, there you go, $100.
Yeah, you're making money. I got to get this fund up so we can really enjoy Cabo and stay in a 5-star, not one of them old 2-star VRBOs or whatever it's called. He's trying to get them digs up. You know what I mean?
Now, again, Mike, as Tyler has told us about that maroon money, we know your ass ain't getting paid no salary where you got to be staying no 2-star. Damn it.
Ain't nobody got no money like Texas A&M.
We know you got it.
They're flying private and staying in a 5-star, no doubt. Whether them kids pay. Maybe this is how Lady lets the coaches stay out. Maybe they stay an extra day on the players. I think that'd be a good idea.
On the players.
That is great. That is rich. That's solid. I hope it works out for you, man.
Yeah. That's not a violation or anything, is it?
Well, I mean, look,
I think he's joking, right? Is it a violation?
Well, I think violations are probably viewed a little differently in today's college football world than they used to be. I think they'll probably overlook the fining of players right now, considering how much these guys are making.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, yes, it is a reaction Monday, and we are looking at a victory Monday as the Texans win. But the Astros season has come to an end, and they will not be in the postseason for the first time since 2016. And we've heard from the general manager, and words are circling around the manager. Should Joe Espada's job be in jeopardy? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Say goodnight to the Astros.
It's a Mokarem Injury Lawyers Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, Monday Night Football. I see Sam Pittman. I mean, Mike McDaniel walking into the Dolphins game as they face the Jets. By the way, you see them uniforms they're going to wear tonight?
Which
one? The Dolphins, them all black joints.
Are they clean? Well, they need something.
They need something to get it going in there. Yeah, that you can hear a little Monday Night Football coming up after the coaches show. Remember, we are done at 5 o'clock today. The coaches show with D'Amico Ryans. We are done 5 o'clock. So stay tuned for that. Then after that, courtesy of Westwood One Monday Night Football, as well comes up after that. All right, it is a reaction Monday, but we also have to react to the season coming to an end with the Astros. You weren't there Thursday, but Framber took them dreads out of his hair.
I did see it.
And it completely changed.
I mean, he goes
7 innings, 10 strikeouts, 1 earned. I mean, it was just insane.
I think I may have tweeted Tyler. Tyler called it. Other people taking credit for it. I think Tyler called it.
That was all me.
It almost ended the whole show for us. I mean, we had to rip up the rundown damn near, and then we all called and was like, "This dude's gonna have a hell of a game." Watch, of course he did. I thought that was gonna be the move to really influence the rest of the team, and then they played the next day. But
maybe should have taken him out like a month or two.
Yeah,
ago.
Maybe should have. Maybe his month wouldn't have been so horrible in September, but. The season's over. This is the first time, which is really foreign around here, first time that the postseason is going to be without the Houston Astros in almost a decade, Clint. And General Manager Dana Brown on her flagship said manager Joe Espada is under contract for next season, but Brown said we're going to take a complete look at all of our operations, but credited Espada for doing a, quote, good job and, quote, pressing a lot of right buttons with all the injuries Houston endured. So there are reports out that obviously it is not 100% sure that Joe Espada would return, and we're already seeing Rocco Baldelli got let go with the Twins. We're already seeing some managers. The Giants fired their manager. We're seeing some managers get moved on from and teams going in a different direction. Listen, Joe got him to the playoffs last year in his first year. This year, they were leading the entire way, it seemed like, until the last 2 weeks. Do you think his job should be in jeopardy? And I know how you have felt about him. You think his job should be in jeopardy?
Yeah, in jeopardy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you look at year one, you dug an embarrassingly deep hole, and somehow with the Mariners collapsing, you dug yourself out and you made the playoffs. This year, you played really well early on, and then I don't care who was playing and who was healthy and who wasn't healthy. Down the stretch, that was awful late in the season. And so do I think he should lose his job? I can't get there, but do I think he should be part of an internal audit and figure out if they do want to move on? Here's where I'm at with Joe Espada is he hasn't done enough to be untouchable. That's for damn sure. And he hasn't been terrible to be a get him the hell up out of here. For me, if the Astros have a manager that is someone that they've wanted, someone that they've looked at, someone that's an obvious upgrade, and like, hey man, we've been wanting this guy for 2-3 years, like the Texans waited on D'Amico Ryans type deal, then I think it's a no-brainer. You make the move and you never look in the rearview mirror. If that's not out there, then I think you got a tough decision. It's already tough with Joe Espada because there were a lot of pressing the right buttons.
Yeah, because if I just dropped you in, Clint, and you look at his 2 years,
yeah,
like you would think it's crazy to even think that the general manager would even be saying, yeah, we're going to look at all the operations.
Yeah.
Including him, right? Well, I mean, listen, the injuries they had clearly was a big reason why they're not playing anymore.
Yep, no doubt.
A big reason. And then, as you said, 2 years. And obviously, I think the players love him.
Yep.
Right? I don't think he's at odds with any important players or whatever. But would I be shocked to think that Dana Brown has been wanting a job where he's running a team and he's been in there in Atlanta and he's had a guy? Wouldn't be shocked at all. And even though it's, if you look at it, you're saying, boy, that wouldn't be fair to fire that guy after everything.
Right.
First off, we all know sports isn't fair. Marty Schottenheimer got fired after going 14-2 once in the NFL, which is insane. So it's not unprecedented that somebody who's had a great record gets fired. On the surface, it looks unfair, but you would understand. And I don't think very many people here would be like, damn, what's Dana doing now? Someone just texted in and said, hell, Dana needs to be needs to be looked at as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's a fire situation. I think it's if you've got a replacement that you really want, you really like, that is a slam dunk, then I can see it happen. Fire and then just go have a coach.
Yeah.
Like I think he deserves to be retained if it's you don't have an upgrade that immediately puts Major League Baseball on notice and lets everybody know, hey, the Astros aren't done. But fire? No, yeah. I can't get there. I agree with you that the injuries have been a major part, really both years. The injuries have been a major part of the situation, and you were, I mean, down to the wire this year, you were a playoff team that was leading the division. So, fire? No. Replaced? Yeah, I could see that happen.
Yeah, because I don't know, man, fellas. I look at what happened to the Astros, and listen, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I don't think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Spiced bread.
Spiced bread too. As well, too. You can catch. I don't know where you get that. Probably HEB. But yeah, and I've said it. I thought they took a real step down. I don't think it's anything crazy. Hall of Fame manager and Dusty Baker, and they took a step down to Joe Espada. But this isn't a situation like you said, man. All right, man. We got to get rid of him. Like, it is clear what happened this year was they were at such a disadvantage when it came to manager. Like, when I get to disadvantage at manager or manager decisions, there's about five or six things that probably land in front of it that I don't think have a lot to do with Joe. The injuries, the people who handled the injuries, the amount of pitchers that went down, Christian Walker. He didn't sign Christian Walker. Like, there are a lot of things I think that jump in front before you get to him. Like, people are texting in, what about AJ Hinch? I know the Tigers are trying to offer him an extension. I don't know if that's available. I wouldn't think that's the direction. Maybe. I think it'd be pretty hard to get him out of Detroit. But, you know, if it's somebody that you're like, all right, you know, clearly it's an improvement. I don't know if they're going to say, but we're running down Bud Black. I don't know how I feel about that. We're running down Rocco Baldelli, although he's done all right in Minnesota, but I don't know. I think Joe has not been as bad as many people want to say he is. I think Joe is a real scapegoat at times for people within the fan base. But you look at this thing, man. Hell, man, Joe, we got to a point there where it's like, Joe, you need to work some miracles, right?
Like, so I'm trying to do the best I can.
Up here, people are talking about, hey, man, Joe needs to sit Framber. For who? For who? Like, I don't know, man. That was a tough situation he was in. All right, coming up as we continue, big news actually today, not just that the Texans got a dub, but they made a move with one of their most expensive players, a trade with the Texans. We'll get you more of that and let you hear D'Amico talk about the moving of Cam Robinson. We'll do that as well as a big thing also D'Amico did yesterday. He gave up play calling duties. How we feel about that moving forward? All of that as we continue live on The Drive.
It's a Mokarem Injury Lawyers Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Irwin said AJ Hinch is the only replacement he'd be excited about. Outside of that, just bring him back.
Yeah, look, I would think if everybody in the building would be okay with bringing back AJ Hinch, I think the city would go nuts. I think it would be an upgrade, obviously. I think just depends on what kind of terms he left on with the Cranes, right? Yeah. I mean, that ultimately is the deal here. I mean, I'm pretty sure he still lives up in the Woodlands. And so I would imagine it would be a pretty easy sale if bridges haven't been burnt. So, yeah, I think it's probably a bit of a pipe dream, but I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, we'll see what happens. I would expect that he comes back, but we'll see. We'll see what happens moving forward as the offseason has started here for your Houston Astros. All right, D'Amico Ryan spoke with the media today, and he addressed the news of the day for the Texans. Not real surprising. We'll discuss it here in a bit. Cam Robinson, their big free agent offseason move to the offensive line. Cam Robinson, who they brought over, $12 million guaranteed, $14 million contract on a one-year deal. He was not starting. He was a backup here, and they've traded him to the Cleveland Browns for sixth or seventh round pick swap in 2027. Here's D'Amico Ryans addressing the trade of Cam Robinson.
Yeah, we traded Cam to the Browns today. Gives Cam an opportunity to go play. Cam wants to play, so it gives him an opportunity to do that, and we wish Cam nothing but the best. He's handled himself the right way since he's been here. He's done everything the right way, everything that we asked him to do. So we wanted to do right by him and give him the opportunity.
All right. Not a surprising move, Clint, that they were able to move Cam Robinson. We heard the thoughts of this early on when the roster was completed coming out of training camp, and we saw that Ursary had won the job at left tackle and that he was a backup. We started to hear thoughts that he may be on the move, and clearly it's finally happened. The injury that the Browns suffered and their offensive line opens up the door for Cam Robinson, and not a surprise, but they make the move.
Yeah, not a surprise. I mean, clearly he's a guy that expected to start and play, and I'm sure the Texans expected him to be the best option at left tackle. And look, I don't know if Ariante Ursery, the second round pick in this year's draft, is playing well enough, and you know all that comes with the rookie. They've just determined that that's the better option, and it's led by how good and how confident and how much trust they have in Ariante Ursery. Or is this a Cam Robinson wasn't what they expected? He didn't fit in that new O-line room. How well did he try to fight through camp with the injuries, or was he a vet and kind of taking it easy through those times? And so I don't know why. Really doesn't matter, to be completely honest with you, why. But the beautiful thing is Nick and D'Amico, once again, they see something, they see a problem, they see a mistake that they made, and they quickly get beyond it. They don't drag it out. They don't waste a bunch of money. They don't allow it to fester. They just move on from it. And so I think first and foremost, I just greatly appreciate, Ron, how quickly they admit they made a mistake and are willing to move on.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. They could have made this worse by
down because it's on its way off.
Oh, man. Aaron?
Andy,
we broke another one.
Got old Mike that's hanging by the last thread.
We broke it. Oh, it's gone. It's gone. Those are on YouTube and Twitch. There it is.
If somebody wants a $1 million idea, the radio industry, for some reason, they can't make these little arms, these little hinges on the arms for these mic stands. They can't seem to make them out of thicker material that lasts a little longer, and they constantly break. So here's your idea.
Yeah, listen, and Andy, if you're listening, you do not have to drive in from wherever you are to get in here and fix this as soon as possible.
I don't know. Pendergast, he'll show up in the morning and his mic be messed up, man. It'd be hot.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Well, Sean, good luck. Hopefully there's a...
I'm going to leave it laying right here.
Yeah, there's a request in there. Hold that thing. I'd like to see Sean hold that piece of steel right there the whole
time. Not good, Sean.
Not good at all. But as I was saying there, like, they could have made this worse and tried to force him into the lineup.
Yeah.
Not just to make the move, but we know it appears their original plan, Clint, was clearly to have him as their left tackle, right? Yeah. They traded away Laremy Tunsil, and no, I don't think they thought he was going to be as good or as talented as Laremy Tunsil, but a solid left tackle that maybe could be a little bit more physical and bring more of what they wanted. And then move Titus inside, and then Ursery and Fisher battle it out on the right side. But a combination of Ursery taking to things during his injury, and then it was never really great from him. He never lived up to it. And then when he played the first game in the Rams, I mean, we weren't the only ones to see, oh, he's in trouble. Like, you came away from it and said he's got to sit down the rest of the way. Unless he's hurt or something, he's got to get healthy and he's got to sit down. I'm glad they didn't do like they did with Kenyon Green. I think they forced the issue last year, starting Kenyon Green, and hell, not even just starting, but not really even giving a viable competition right there at that spot. They didn't force it here. They said, all right, man, this ain't it.
Yeah, look, they didn't force it. I greatly appreciate them moving on quickly from it and not forcing it and not making an obvious mistake into a two-year trial, right? I appreciate that. Now, the other side of that is, how bad has Nick and D'Amico been with the offensive line?
Nick by himself at first, and now D'Amico and Nick together.
Oh, man, I mean, you look at Blake Fisher, you look at Juice Scruggs, you look at Kenyon Green, now you look at Lakin Tomlinson possibly losing his job to Juice Scruggs, who wasn't even good enough to start with an interior offensive line injury.
You were avoiding everything you could not to get him on the field.
And now Cam Robinson is up out of here. I mean, I guess the saving grace here for Nick and D'Amico is the fact that it is a draft pick at left tackle that allowed you to trade Cam Robinson. It is a draft pick in Juice Scruggs that's allowing you to potentially bench Lakin Tomlinson. I guess that's a saving grace, but boy, it just seems like it's miss after miss after miss, whether it's draft, free agent, trade. They have been...
Shaq Mason.
Man, they have been really bad. And you look at the misses on the offensive line along with... however you want to couch the instability at offensive coordinator and the inexperience at offensive coordinator, man, it's a wonder they were able to win 10 games two straight years and overcome that. Because, I would argue that the two most important things, other than quarterback, the two most important things if you're going to be a competitive team at a playoff level is play offensive play caller and offensive line. I mean, and they haven't seemed to hit stride on either one of them, Ron. So it's crazy the level of success that they've been able to have without having that part of it figured out.
Yeah, hopefully things get more positive. But Cam Robinson traded to the Cleveland Browns for a sixth or seventh round swap in 2027. Coming up behind us again, the Coach's Show. That's going to be in about 10 minutes. The Coach's Show with D'Amico Ryans. They're going from 5 to 7. Texans All Access will take over after the Coach's Show. And then courtesy of Westwood One, thank goodness. Bengals Broncos, you got the good game. O against O, that is not the fun one. No Dolphins, Jets, you will get the Broncos and the Bengals coming up after the Coach's Show. All right, T-Mill, let's start off the week pretty well here. Got a little Monday Night Football, right? We got baseball playoffs coming up. Should be a good week. What's T-Mill's best bets today?
Yeah, we'll start the week's best bets with some football wagers, some picks on this doubleheader we got in Monday Night Football. By the way, I've been saying it. This is our wheelhouse.
Football's been banging it, huh?
Yes. Thursday Night Football last week, we went 4 for 5. Damn near perfection. Let's try to do perfect tonight. 5 of them all within these two games. Dolphins, Jets, and Bengals, Broncos. First, I got the Dolphins money line. Got it at about -145 as they are hosting the Jets. In that same game, I'm on the over. Jets at Dolphins over 44 this evening. The other game, Denver. I got the Denver Broncos -6 points. At -145 odds, they are hosting the Bengals. And then two player props for you to finish things off on a Monday. I got Devon Achane over 40.5 receiving yards. That's within that Dolphins game. He is a Miami Dolphin. Achane over 40.5 receiving yards. And lastly, Jamar Chase.
Guarantee.
Over 5.5 receptions. They better be going to him early and often. Those are your best bets.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's Joe Burrow, if it's Jake Browning or John Browning, who I called him last week, he going to get them 6 catches. I'll be damned if Zach Taylor don't find a way to go get his 6.
You got room for me?
I do.
Let me get 100 on that Jamar Chase.
Say, remember all them right. 18 targets he got?
That was my favorite bet tonight, too.
It should be. It should be. I like the Dolphins too. At home in these jerseys, especially if they come out inspired the way they did against the Bills, I like them as well. And I like the Broncos. The Broncos, I saw it at 6.5. You got it at 6. The Broncos, I mean, they should. Look, I mean, they got the doors blown off of them, the Bengals last week in Minnesota, and the Broncos may have the best front 7 in the game to get after Browning. So they should if they are what people think they are, I can't even look at you. If they are what people think they are, they should go ahead and take care of business. Alright, somebody get here and fix this damn mic before Sean comes in. D'Amico Ryan's the Coach's Show coming up next. Clint, great job until the end.
Thanks, Bob.
The reverse of the Texans yesterday. And Tyler, great job as well. I am Ron, the show as always, Houston. We love you, baby.
Take the drive.
All right, thanks, Tyler. Let's roll.